I'm really, really happy to be the moderator of her meeting. And here is Céline.
Je m'appelle Céline.
I'm an addict and my name is Céline. Can you see my face over this thing? You know what? This morning I had a choice. I had the choice of getting stoned or not getting stoned. And I had the choice to not get stoned because you showed me Narcotics Anonymous. It's a high. I'm not afraid anymore. I'm not afraid. I got up here, and Dutch came up to join me, just as I had come up to join France. I turned around, I saw you, and I just felt your love, your pride in being here this morning. And I'm not afraid anymore. I'm excited, though. I got up and you clapped. Hadn't said a thing yet. I hadn't done anything yet. But there are people who haven't had that. And they've been working on this convention for a year. They haven't slept a wink all weekend. And this morning, their hearts are connected right up to their eyes. They've got the shakes. And I want us to tell them how much we appreciate them. Let's give them their due, because if I'm here this morning, it's because they gave me this privilege. And I want us to just stand up. Get on up. Thanks. Thanks for giving me the privilege of being up here this morning. Yesterday, I asked to be introduced to Dutch. I wanted to see what his little face looked like because I knew he was going to be sitting beside me up here and I'd heard about him. But you know, when I saw Dutch, I felt like, a little girl. And I said, I'm the one who's going to be sitting beside you tomorrow. And I'm too little. I'm not even 8. I'm not even 8 years old. And you know what? This morning it's, yeah, that's true. I'm little. I'm young. But I'm also grown up. I'm also experienced with my 8 years. I'm proud. It's amazing. No way. It's just too much. remember I'd listen to people sharing, and I'd say, you know, I'd listen to them, and they'd be talking about their childhoods, and the problems they had, just living through that childhood or surviving. I thought, well, what could I say to them? If I tell them about my childhood, they'll just be green with envy. I was a wanted child. I was coddled. I was rocked. People read me 1001 Nights from cover to cover. And I'm an addict anyways. I'm going to simply try because that's the way I am. I'm going to simply try to tell you who I was, what happened when I got to know all kinds of drugs, and what I became with NA and NA's members, and what I'm becoming. Well, I told you I was a privileged child. I had a whole zoo of animals. I remember I was the first little girl in a big family, and they took me on a Sunday drive. You know, I was a little specimen. I talked, I sang, I danced, all very young. And they took me to my uncles, to my aunts, to my grandparents, and they put the baby up on the table, and I'd sing. You know, they'd say, sing and tell us a story, and everybody would applaud, and I loved it. You know, I'd climb off the tables, and I was 30 years old. And I know that many of you have heard this. You know, I can't invent another life, though. That's the only life I had. So that's what I'm going to have to tell you about this morning. So obviously I can't tell you about major problems. When I was very young, when I started school, you know, teachers had over 30 little clowns in their class. They couldn't give me all the attention that I was used to. So I was not the kind of girl who'd come to school with an apple. I'd show up with a bag of apples. Get the idea of what kind of a user I turned out to be? Love me. Love me with a capital L. I've already given away everything. You know, I wasn't old, but I wasn't doing very well. And unlike many people here, what I should have taken as being a fortune, good fortune, a privilege in life, the fact that I had parents who don't suffer from the disease of addiction, the fact that I had parents who were able to fulfill many of my needs, I experienced that as a handicap. Because, you know, I went to school, and there were little girls, little boys who'd come in crying in the morning because they were starving. They hadn't had any breakfast. Because someone had died. Because their father had lost his job. For all kinds of reasons. They'd come in tears. And that never happened in my house. I had little friends. I went to their house. I loved it, you know. She had a lot of brothers. And I was the only child for 6 years. She had a whole bunch of brothers and sisters. And I'd walk in there and, oh, they would be shouting and screaming and, oh my God, chaos. And then Daddy came home. Oh, suddenly, silence. Oh, I got a high from that. I thought that was great. I thought my life was so boring. Nothing ever happened in our house. Well, I'm made sure to make things stir up quite a bit in our house. Didn't take much time. I've got all kinds of things in my life, but one thing I never had the way I have it this morning, and that's so many people listening to me like this. Wow. I remember once I was 10, coming home from school, and I tried to tell my mother that I wasn't doing well. That I just didn't feel good inside. That I felt unhappy. You know, it's pretty open where we live. And she just walked out of the room, and I was in the middle of a sentence, and I felt like a little dog following behind her on her heels, trying to finish my sentence. And I said to her, "Ma, I think I'm depressed." "Ah, little girl, just give yourself a kick in the butt, and, you know, there's no reason for you to feel this way." Well, I found that stifling. I was suffocating with it. I was all choked up inside. I didn't feel good about myself because I understood that I was ugly. I was an ugly duckling child. You know, things went fine till I was in grade 5. I was in a co-ed class. And there were 6 girls. And that year, I recognized that I had this great gift, but I didn't realize that then I never could see properly with my eyes, and I went to have my eyes examined, and I was given glasses. Now, I can't see the brightness of colors, and when I put the glasses on, it was in the fall, for the first time I could see the colors, the leaves. I was so happy. It was the first time that I could see all of that. And my mother cried, and she said, "Oh, how awful to have to disfigure a child with glasses." That day I felt ugly. And I look at pictures, and let me tell you, it wasn't just my imagination. I really had everything it took to be considered ugly. I just had one thing in my head. I was 10 years old, and all I had in my mind was men. I was brought up in fairy tale land, you know. I was told all kinds of fairy tales about how things went with men. Well, I wanted my Prince Charming, and I was 10. And with my glasses, I could see which guys were good-looking. And they could see what I looked like, and believe me, I didn't have the same effect on them as they were having on me. You know, it's great because today I can laugh about it, but let me tell you that the first time that I shared this, I was crying my eyes out because it was so painful for me. I was a little girl from a small town. You know, we'd have little parties in basements at friends' houses. And I'd spend my whole week dreaming about the Friday night party or the Saturday night party. And that day, you know, I was going to be beautiful. It was going to be, you know, there was going to be an enchanted evening, and a beautiful guy would ask me to dance, and we'd dance the night away. And that's never what happened. By the end of the party, I was the one who was cleaning up, and I was the one who was trying to pick up. So people start to bring beer. I tasted it. I didn't really like the taste. Nothing special there. And I was a big sufferer. You know, I was 5'1", and I had rheumatism when I was growing up. I was 4'6" when I was 16. I was called half body, 50% package of skin and bones. Have you ever seen somebody who's 4'6" get really, really angry? Well, apparently it looks real funny. So they had a lot of fun at my expense. And I just couldn't. I couldn't afford the luxury of being offended and staying offended because I was too afraid that they wouldn't love me anymore. So one day I came and someone in my gang was smoking a joint. And the girls didn't know about this. And I smoked up with the guys. And in my book, I figured if I can't be their girlfriend, I'll be their pal. I don't remember the effect of that joint aside from the effect I just told you about. That same week, there was another party on Friday. I spent my whole week dreaming about it again. I showed up, and someone offered me a glass of wine. I don't know how much wine I drank. No idea. But, you know, all of a sudden, things just, you know, my hair, my glasses, everything just, you know, changed. I shook my head, I shook my hair out, I got rid of my braids, and I had this long hair down to my butt, and when I stood up, somebody whistled. That was the best day of my life. And I ran after that feeling for the next 15 years. I said, I am never going to be wanting anything anymore. I'm going to get that buzz no matter what substance I've got to take to get it. And I kept my promise. But I never got that high again before this morning. To tell you that my active using was focused around men, my desire for men, my desire to please, and my rock bottom was the same. For so many years, I could see that I wasn't beautiful, I wasn't desirable. But with dope, you know, I could say we wouldn't be, we're not nuts, you know, if we hadn't liked something about this somewhere, we wouldn't have taken so much of it. It did help me to live for a while because I wasn't equipped to live. I learned, you know, I'd learned the whole fairy tale lifestyle from, you know, what I had read, but I didn't know anything about reality. And even today, very often, my trouble is with reality. In our basic text, it says, that's a symptom of the disease, and I've got that symptom, through and through. So when I took drugs, I could say, ah, fuck them all. I started to develop a whole type for myself. I got contact lenses and a lot of thick eyeliner. And, hey man, I was off. My mother said, you know, she was talking to my brothers and sisters, and she'd say, you know, this one's like this or that one's like that. She'd talk about my sister, who's very pretty, and she's 10 years younger than me, and she's just gorgeous. And she'd say, oh, Natalie is so beautiful. She's like this, she's like that. When it was time to talk about me, she'd say, Celine is another type. Well, I was a different type. Well, I still am a different type. But now I'm proud of being a different type.
Alors, j'ai appris à séduire.
So I learned how to be seductive. One day I met this guy. I went into the student cafe. And he looked untouchable. Oh, those are the guys I love. So I made sure he saw me, and I could see in his eyes that the earth had stopped turning. I liked that feeling. He needed me very much, and I loved it. He loved me a lot. Not well, but a lot. So obviously one day, you know, it just fell apart. And during the years I spent with that guy, I used a lot, you know, on the breaks, you know, the kind of breaks that I had, you know. Nah, I don't like this. Every day the same. You know, I couldn't leave. I couldn't walk out before I used. I couldn't go out. And when I left that guy, he had an alcohol problem. So, you know, I kept my eye on him. And when he left, I had nobody left to watch. So I figured, oh, great. Oh, it was great. It was great for a little bit. I thought I was a star. It took me a half an hour to kiss everybody hello whenever I walked into any place. I don't know what I'd just taken, but I loved it. And one day, the disease caught up with me. No matter what I put into myself, no matter what kind of dope I put into me, there was nothing I could take that could freeze out that pain. That same pain that I had before I started to use. I was ugly. And this time, I wasn't just ugly on the outside. I was ugly on the inside. I cried so much. I cried so much those last years. I couldn't take it anymore. My mask was just cracking into pieces. It was shattering everywhere. I remember there was this guy who spent a lot of time with me in those days, and I walked into the hotel one night, and he said, "Hey, Celine, what time are you going to be crying tonight?" That's it. We started crying then and there. I couldn't use anymore, and I certainly couldn't live without using. And believe me, I had no idea how one could live without using. Absolutely no clue. I'd rock myself in my bed, and I had my knees tied up against my chest. I mean, you know, God had disappeared from my life very early because, you know, our household was really religious, so I was fed up with God very early on. So obviously I didn't want anything that God had to offer, so I started to pray, I don't even know what. And I said, well, if it's true that there's a God out there somewhere, come and get me. I just can't. I can't take it anymore. I don't want this anymore. And every morning, it was hell just to wake up. Every new day, I think, oh, no, not another day. Not another one. We talk about where the disease takes us. Well, I went through the gates of folly. At a dizzying pace, I tried to commit suicide. And I had written all kinds of wonderful letters. I tried to commit suicide with a substance that I didn't really know much about. It was drugs with medication. Now, with medication, you know, if you don't take enough, you sleep. And if you take too many, you can't sleep. Well, I couldn't sleep. They didn't go through my stomach. I was so sick. I vomited. And that's what happens, you know, at the hospital. If you're still there and they get you in time. Well, I didn't do it in the hospital. It all happened by itself. You know, it wasn't even a call for help. And that's what I wanted, really. It was to call for help. Well, nobody saw anything. And that day, I became convinced that there was no point in trying again, because I couldn't even do that right, just like I missed out on everything else in life. I was no good at anything. I couldn't even manage to commit suicide. One morning when I was feeling fine, with my dark glasses this big because I'd gone to sleep with contact lenses which were not made to be worn while sleeping, and I didn't have any cigarettes, I walked into a restaurant to get some cigarettes because I really wasn't going out too much anymore, you know, just for emergencies. You know, the bar queen no longer existed. I didn't want to show her face. So I went out to get some cigarettes. And that guy used to hang out at parties, basically at the level of the table legs. You know, when you want to look for him at the end of a party, you know just where to look, under the table, you know, or rolled up in a ball in a corner. And he looked just great when I saw him that day. He's reading a newspaper, and I don't know why I said hi to him. I said, "What are you up to?" And he said, "Nothing much." He dropped his newspaper, and I guess he changed his mind when he took a look at my face. He said, "Yeah, something very special, Celine. I'm not using anymore. I've been clean for 2 years." Well, no, he'd seen me before, you know. This was a restaurant bar, you know. I didn't know anything about restaurants that didn't have bars in them. So they've seen me, you know, crawl out of that place. Well, this time, I just, you know, I didn't want anyone to hear this. I was so frightened. I was dying to get out. He said, "If you want something, I'll pick you up on Sunday." I was afraid that he'd say anything else, so I said, okay. Well, at that point, NA didn't exist in Quebec. But they were recovering addicts anyways. And I was lucky. I was lucky to be able to meet an addict that morning who made me a recovering addict. He's not the one who held my hand. She did. Brought me a recovering addict, a woman, and she's the one who held my hand. She's here tonight. She's a member of NA. She's my sponsor, and I love her. Thank you, Jeanette.
Cette femme-là m'a guidée.
That woman guided me, led me. She loved me well before I was lovable. And let me tell you, I wasn't easy to love. The first meeting of an anonymous group that they brought me to, I was welcomed very nicely, and that was good fortune for me because I was no longer welcome anywhere. And I liked it. And something terrific happened, something extraordinary. The next morning, I didn't feel like I had to get high. So I hadn't even had 3 months in that anonymous group before I was able to share. I would thump my hand on the literature. I'd say that everything was in there. That if you went back to using, you were just a moron, you stupid, because you couldn't understand anything. I knew what was what. And I was no longer able to fit through the door. My head was so swollen. I knew it all. And when my friend, my sponsor, tried to say something to me, I'd say, yes, but. Yeah, but. But, you know, I, you know, for me, well, after 4 months, things started to go not so great, and I realized that we were talking about alcohol. I cleared up a bit enough to figure that out. So I went shopping with my sister and smoked a big fat joint. I had a good laugh. It was fun. And that was okay. A few weeks later, I found myself in the presence of another charming young untouchable-seeming guy. And we were sitting down at his place in the kitchen. And I felt like I had swallowed a broomstick. I hadn't had anything. And I felt very good that he wanted to make love. He took out some hash, and I smoked. Because inside, I don't know how I could possibly touch somebody. I don't know how I could let anybody touch me if I'm not high. And I think if I hadn't smoked that joint, I'd still be sitting in the same kitchen today. Because I didn't know, not because it was impossible to do anything differently, but it's because I didn't know that it was possible. And the day before I had my one-year cake, I mean, the same fraternity, I mean, I was collecting my tokens, you know. I wasn't drinking. So I'm well. So I went to consume my drug of choice in industrial quantities the night before my one-year anniversary. I was up all night. And I knew that it just was nuts. I went to the restaurant before going to the meeting where I was supposed to have my one-year cake. And I cried. And I said, I want that cake because I have not had a drink. And I deserve it. So, I'm going to have a cake that's decorated like this. You know, you are as honest as you can be, not as honest as you want to be. Needless to say, not too long after that, I was back in it all. Complete, total, all dressed up to the ears. A month, 2 months. Well, somewhere deep down inside, I'd understood. I couldn't have any kind of drug. I couldn't use it all because, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to use just a little. But I
you know. I couldn't. There was a month, 2 months, and I'd be back. Again and again. And there I was again, sleeping in the back of my car, sniffing and drinking before going into work because I was trying to get rid of the shakes. Well, that's not the kind of life I wanted. I was working in a restaurant in those days, and there was a guy who came to see me on lunch break, and he said, "Celine, I'd like you to be here. I'm having a Narcotics Anonymous cake tonight." I said to my friend, "Oh, poor little guy, we need to encourage him. Let's go. Poor thing." Because, you know, during all of that, I still couldn't get through the door. I just knew that things weren't going well for me, but, you know, I know that. So I went to that meeting room, and it was called Les Couchetards, people who stay up late. It was in Longueuil. I walked in looking as, like what I could look like. Stupid. You know, we wrote a nice card, we bought him flowers. You know, he needs us to be there. Well, did I ever get taken in? I got taken in. And I hadn't been using for 6 months. Because 6 months earlier, I was driving my car. And I don't know, and I guess it doesn't even matter today whether I know or not. I don't know whether it was an attempted suicide or just an accident. It doesn't matter now what it was, but all I do know is that when the car skidded, the only thing that I asked for was, just make it all stop. I can't take it anymore. I hit a tree, I spun around 3 times, and I emerged unscathed. The car was a total write-off. I was lucky. I'd been protected. I didn't kill anybody. So I hadn't been using for 6 months because deep down inside, I figured if you don't care about your life because it's shit, well, you will have no right to put anybody else's life in danger. And that's how I came into the NA meeting room. And I saw all kinds of faces, saw all kinds of people who looked good. They looked well. They looked happy to be there. There were a lot of people. And when the meeting started, you could have heard a pin drop. You could have heard a mosquito flying. You guys impressed me. And I wanted what I saw in your eyes. I never started using again. My teeth were clenched. I wasn't easy to love. I wasn't easy to approach. I walked into a meeting room, and there was somebody sharing up in the front, you know, was just bearing their heart and soul. And he said, "If you've just come in that door, you have come through the doors of happiness." And from the back of the room, I said, "Oh, come on, you know, take your gates of heaven and shove them up your ass." That's the way I was. And you know what? People came up to me after and they said, "Stay with us." So, you know, if you're one one of those people who breaks up meetings, he shouts and yells and bitches?
Stay with us. But it's rough. It's not easy.
What are you supposed to do on Friday night after a meeting? Where are you supposed to go? Janet would drag me along. There I was, mad, angry, clenched teeth. And I'd say, listen, lady. Well, I won't swear here, but anyways. I'd say, listen up. At this time, this is a time when I would start to get dressed to go out. So what exactly are we going to do, and where exactly are we going to go? It was a midnight meeting. She dragged me to that one. So I say, yeah, now what? Anyhow, we kept restaurants open very late. I have drank enough coffee to have upset stomach after upset stomach. I'd met you all for about 2 weeks before, and I'd gone to Toronto, nice little trip, to my brother's. He's an active user, an active addict. Active with a capital A. It's not so great, is it? And there was something for everyone, needless to say. And I didn't want to use, did I? And I became obsessed. I didn't know what to do. Because God, well, there was no God for me. And there weren't any members around me. And I was just obsessed. It was permeating me everywhere. At some point, I said, all right, you know, I'm just, you know, going into the shower and, you know, turn on the cold water. I've been told that some clinics do that and couldn't do any harm. Oh, boy, I took a cold shower. I got down on my knees. Not because I was pious, you know, forget about that. I wasn't a religious type. But because my legs couldn't carry me anymore. That's it. So I had no choice. But from the very bottom of my soul, I cried out, if there is anything anywhere, do something. Because if I feel that if I walk out of this toilet with this inside my gut, I will not be able to take it, and I'm going to go and get stoned. And I did not get high, and I did not spend the night in the toilet. I somehow came to believe that there was something somewhere out there that could restore me to sanity. And that's my everyday step, my progress step. I cannot talk to you about God, because I don't know who God is. And today, it doesn't matter anymore if I don't know. I don't know. All I know is that there is something out there somewhere. When I call out, and when I ask from the bottom of my heart, well, then things start to work. You could call it cosmic energy, or you could call it, you know, fusion of I don't know what. I don't know what it is. But that's where it is for me. I heard somebody say that they prayed without believing, and it worked. Well, that's what I did. And it works. I have faith too, but I can't explain God to you. All I know is that there's some kind of strength that expresses itself in my life whenever I call upon it. When whenever I call upon it. And it's marvelous. I had so much trouble with the first step that I, you know, obviously it was clear to me that I was powerless over my life. My life had become unmanageable. I mean, that was obvious to anybody. But that I was powerless, well, that was a fight. Life becoming unmanageable, no, that was obvious. But finally, because of what I could see in your eyes, I was able to just drop my arms and, oh my God, did it feel good.
For the conclusion of this presentation, please turn your cassette over and depress the play button. Do not rewind your cassette. Pour la suite de cette présentation, s'il vous plaît, veuillez tourner votre cassette et peser sur le bouton de marche play. Ne rebobinez pas votre cassette.
Understand that God had never let me down. Somewhere I had believed, and when I came back, I didn't want to believe anymore. I didn't want you to talk about God to me. I was given a terrific gift after my first call for help. I had been without any, I mean without absolutely any obsession for 4 months. And when I came back and I called out to that guy, oh, you know, shove your gates of heaven up your bum. You know, I felt like saying, you know, where was God when I ran into that post and when I hit the tree? Where was he when I had that Coke shoved up my nose? Well, I understood that God had given me a wonderful gift. But I hauled that gift everywhere. I wasn't careful with it. I dragged it into bars. I dragged it into users' places. Gives me a piece of jewelry and I keep fiddling around with it and leaving it wherever, well, I'm going to end up losing it. It's not because the person who gave it to me is at fault. She didn't or he didn't take it away. I'm the one who just wasn't careful with the gift. And I needed them. I needed them because not a single man can teach me how to become a woman. Their hands. I took their hands. I listened to them. They listened to me. We shared. We cried. We laughed. We sang. We danced. Together in recovery in NA meeting rooms. And after about 2 years, I started to say, okay, you know, now I'm well enough. It's time to share this with man. And I met somebody. And I could see how the earth stopped spinning when I looked into his eyes, and I liked that feeling. But I remembered where I was coming from because you reminded me. Because you gave me the opportunity to share. And I had talked about it so much that I couldn't forget it. But I really wanted that man. I desired that man. And for the first time in my life, I really made a leap of faith. I could turn all kinds of things over to God, but not that, not that. I was a big enough girl to take care of that all by myself, wasn't I? So you can imagine what the results were. I had taken a personal inventory. I had done my fifth step. And I was, not the way you think, I was Miss No. You know, I knew what I didn't want anymore. That was no, this, no, this, no, this, no. But I didn't know what I did want. I knew what I did not want. And that was a pretty good start. That eliminated all kinds of things. And I decided I didn't want someone who had not resolved his relationship issues and who was still in one relationship and ready to switch into another one. So that night, I went to bed. Oh, I mean, it was so great. We went out to eat. We put music on in the jukebox. We held our hands across the table. I mean, boy, I hadn't done that in so long. I loved it. I went to bed that night, and I made a deal with God. You know, I was used to making deals. I said, listen, I don't have time to wait around. And you can't write me a message on the table. But for once, I'm going to have faith in you. But you better get your act together to make sure you're right. So I said, look, tomorrow morning when I get up, if inside I feel yes, then I'm going to get into that relationship. And if inside me I feel like it's no, I won't. Well, I can tell you something. Next morning I woke up, and it was very easy to figure out what was my will and what was his will. I got up, and inside it said, no. And I was saying, yes, yes. And I followed that. I called up the guy and I said to him, no way. I told him what I'd done. He thought I was pretty weird. And I said, no, I just don't want to get involved. I went to a meeting room. I cried my eyes out to the other women. And when we did our closing circle, it was really hard for me to accept his will because I couldn't understand it. And it hurt. And I wanted to see that desire shining in the eyes of a man. But 8 months later, I met a man who didn't need me. When he looked at me, the earth didn't move. He simply said that he'd like to get to know me better. He still doesn't need me. But we are happy, and we've been together for 5 years. That man had grown up in NA. I learned that I didn't have to do somersaults anymore. I could just be loved for who I am. That man taught me that I could experience a loving relationship in an atmosphere of respect and trust. And thank you for that, Pierre-Yves. Whatever happened happens in this relationship, because, you know, we don't know what life holds in store for us. We, of course, hope to continue to progress in harmony as we are right now. But whatever happens in life and in the future, today I know that it's possible. I know it's possible to have this kind of relationship. I know that it's possible to be loved and respected. I know that it's possible to experience harmony. This guy never gets mixed up with my recovery. I recover. I have my recovery. He has his recovery. And we both enjoy each other's and take advantage of each other's. But that's because of all of you. I have no idea how long I've been up here sharing. It's a marvelous program. It has just freed me up so much. This fourth and fifth step, you know, that led me to make an inventory of my defects of character and my shortcomings. Well, I couldn't resolve everything, but I can see them all the more clearly. That's the difference. But I was able to make a choice in terms of what I wanted to experience and what I didn't. And now, before, I told you that what I knew deep down was what I didn't want anymore. Well, slowly but surely now, bit by bit, I'm starting to get to know a little bit more about what I do want. And that's great. And that's because of the steps. Because of the help of my sponsor, because of sharing, because of my sponsees, because of all of your great sharings and that you give me and I receive. I danced with Louise before the meeting started. I asked Louise, I said, come, let's dance. Because Louise said yesterday that when she danced before the meeting, it made her feel good. And she felt full. And I figured, well, let me try. Well, it worked for her. That's what I want to continue doing in NA. I'd like to continue to learn. It's great to learn, and it did work, Louise. It did make me feel good. I made direct amends. Initially, I did it without telling my sponsor. A few months into the program, I went and sat down with my mother and I said, Ma, I gotta tell you something. I've hated you for 15 years. That's not exactly a direct amend, is it? They don't say make a list for no reason. We know the steps are there for a reason. So I had to make a direct amend for my direct amend, and it wasn't easy. So, at one point, I got back on track. I made a list. And I began. I began to make direct amends. And it's wonderful. It's so liberating. To make a direct amend to people who I know love me and who I have hurt, well, it's hard, but it's also easy at the same time. It's hard, but it's also easy. I know that I'll be accepted because they love me. But go try to make a direct amend to people I've hurt, but who've also hurt me. And they don't feel like making any direct amend to me. That is much harder. But you know what? Oh, it's liberating. It's amazing. You know, there was one bar owner who I stole from. I took all kinds of alcohol because it was so easy. That guy used to grab my ass. I mean, just imagine what he used to do to me, you know? Whoops. All my gestures will be a little hard to translate, but... Unfortunately, the interpreter can't be seen, so you have to just imagine the gestures. And so to be at peace with myself, I had to go see that guy. And I knew that he would continue to say, "I told you, a good thing she stopped using him." You know, forget it, you know. He would, you know, try me in public regularly. So I went to see the guy, and I asked to sit down and have a coffee with him. And I said, "Marcel, I got something to tell you. You know, when I was working for you, I stole a lot from you. If you think that you can make an estimate of it, I'm prepared to pay you back." Well, he took that as best he could. He said, "That would be much too long. It will cost you much too much. I'm very happy that you're just not taking any more, and then just get the fuck out of here, and that's it." I have to tell you how good I felt. And it's true. Because when I walk in front of that guy today, I can walk with my head held high. I have nothing to hide from him. And I asked him for forgiveness. It's a terrific gift. Well, I would like to go on with the inventory. I don't want to have to write 45 pages each time anyways. It's not as heavy as the first one, so I try to keep up with myself and keep track of myself as best I can. I meditated this summer, I think, for the first time. Not with any techniques, you know, because that made me go nuts. I was just in my backyard, you know. I've got a garden for the first time. And in planting and harvesting, I saw what wealth there is in the earth. The wealth of the soil reminded me of the abundance of what we get here at NA. I am so full of gratitude. You know, I was worth nothing. I was worthless. I was no one. I walked into this room with no opinion. Because if you said black, I'd say black. If you said white, I'd say white. Because I just wanted you to love me so badly. And today, thanks to you, thanks to the love that you have given to me, thanks to NA, I can tell you that I am a woman who can stand straight and proud. And if you say black when I think white, I'll say white. But you're the ones who've taught me that. My time is up and my heart is overflowing. My heart is brimming with gratitude. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving me a chance to become the woman who I am becoming. Thank you for listening, because no one had ever listened before. Thank you for believing in me. You've believed in me long before I could believe in myself. That you can feel this inner peace that I'm feeling. It's so good. It's so good. Well, the tears are coming, and I hope that you can make love. Something just came to mind. I hope you just can enjoy making love without drugs. I mean, oh, it's great. I've learned to do it, and it's wonderful. Thank you.